Strap yourself in,
because we're set up, switched on, and ready to go.
Yes, sir, reading you loud and clear. Clear. The clock has started.
Five, 5, 4, 4, 3, 3, 2, 1, 1.
This week's episode of our podcast. Today we are going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our field. By sharing our collective expertise, we will show you how to harness, control, and use your own skill set to achieve ultimate success and live the life you want. And now, please welcome your host.
Welcome to this week's Smallest Gas Podcast. This podcast is designed for small government contractors, service providers, and manufacturers as part of the government contractor ecosystem, connecting people, organizations, and resources. I'm your host, Just Nate, and we have DK sitting on the table here. Welcome, DK.
Hey, Nate. How are you doing today?
A little sore. Quite sore, actually. I don't know if we can sit for an hour of this podcast, but without me having to get up at least, walk around a little bit. So, you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Don't lie, you're sore, too.
I'm sunburned.
Yes. So for those of you who don't,
We went camping.
So not only do we do a podcast together, we camp. Separate tents, but we were camping.
We had 32 people.
Yes.
That was a lot of people.
A lot of people.
We went to the dinosaur tracks in south of La Junta at Picket Wire. If you have not done that yet, highly recommend it. It's a little in the boonies.
Lots of water.
Was excellent. Was very good. Petroglyphs, dinosaur tracks.
The world's largest dinosaur tracks.
World's largest concentration of dinosaur tracks. In North America.
In North America.
I was actually curious to see where the other tracks are at.
I don't know. I'll have to research.
France, somewhere. China. I bet China.
Probably.
They do everything bigger.
Okay, so here, we're not here to talk about dinosaur bones. Right. Maybe we'll do another episode for that. But today in the studio, we have Mr. Charlie Hargett. He's the owner and CEO of FPNC Consulting.
Yep.
There you go.
Got it.
It's FPNC
Consulting.
Is it consulting? The C's not consulting?
No, it's FPNC Consulting.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll talk about that. So, Charlie, what does FPNC Consulting mean?
So, FPNC Consulting is the FPNC stands for Federal Procurement and Contracting. It kind of lends credence to my personal background and where I came from.
Nice.
Which is?
Awkward
pause.
Yeah. I have a background in as a federal government contracting officer. Came up in the Air Force, active duty for a while. Did that in about 6 years, and then got out of the Air Force and did civil service contracting for the Navy, Army, spent some time with Defense Health Agency up in Aurora, and ran the acquisition office in Golden at the Department of Energy's NREL, or Department of Energy's Golden Field office that is co-located with NREL.
Oh, okay.
So it is Federal Procurement and Contracting Consulting.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
I didn't know that. I thought the C was...
Well, it's kind of like CAC, right? CAC card? No. It's just one of those things. This is not one of those things.
So, Charlie, so tell us about FPNC, what you guys do. We've talked before, but give the listening audience here a little idea of what the model is and what you guys do.
Yeah, so I founded this. I wanted to get out of the government to help contractors navigate the procurement space. It's especially small vendors or companies who are new to the federal space. I'd go to these conferences as a government person and interact with these folks that had great service offerings or great products that they'd want to sell to the government, but they'd have no idea how to actually sell to the government. And for those of us that are in this area, it comes a little easier because we know how to navigate it a little bit, but these new companies just didn't understand. being on the government side, I just kept talking, having these same conversations over and over again, but I really couldn't dig in and help the way I really wanted to and the way I thought I could. So I figured at some point I would like to get out of the government and take up that steed. And it just worked out that an opportunity presented itself where I could get out of the government. So I did. And, after an interesting trek, I found myself starting my own business and doing that exact thing. So what FPNC does is we're a team of either former federal government contracting officers or people that have been around the business a while, help companies with setting up a pipeline of opportunities, managing a pipeline, developing a strategy and doing business development strategy, proposal development, proposal writing, and even after contract award, we help develop program management offices or improve program management offices so that these companies are better aligned to deliver what they said they're going to deliver in the proposal process.
So real quick, Dennis, how do we get our company to sign up to hire consultants like this? I mean, what I'm curious, what do you guys see? Every company I've ever worked for, they have their own BD branch. So are you smaller companies that these companies don't have BD at all? So they just hire you?
A lot of companies don't.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of them are not really an afterthought, but it's more of an additional duty that they're just, hey, go out there and go find some opportunities and we'll track it when we get around to it. And it's some of the
times. Or they're developing a technology and they hadn't really.
That I can see, right?
Yeah.
Because typically it doesn't take a BD, then you have a salesman.
Look at our friends down at Model Outdoors, right?
Yeah.
They wanted to get into the government space. They don't really do BD. They've done online marketing.
They do sales and marketing. Yeah.
So that's, again, a lot of companies do not.
Yeah, we're a good fit where a company is, they're focused more on the delivery and they don't have a lot of overhead resources to apply to the, a full-time business development person. So we'll come in and we'll set up a process and we'll meet with the company executives and we'll just, on a weekly or whatever cadence that they desire, we'll go through that pipeline as we find them. And we'll sit with them at doing gate reviews and bid, no bid decisions, all the whole process. Yep.
Do you guys do any of the staffing related work too? Do you engage with staffing? Cause part of my job, I'm a BD guy. So, a lot of the work that I do also entails, because we're a small company, entails recruiting, staffing, aligning people to positions. Do you guys do any of that kind of stuff too? Or not really?
Traditionally, that's not something that we have done, but we're starting to see more and more of that just organically. Because we're tied to the an opportunity as it grows and goes along, and because we've also helped develop a strategy around that. We're getting more and more into that, and it's becoming expected, and it's becoming part of what our clients are looking for.
And it is part of the process. Yeah. The other piece is the pricing piece. I'm assuming you guys don't do that either, right?
No, so we're capable of doing it. In fact, one of the team members on FPNC is a former, he spent many years in the policy and pricing leadership position, and he's very well adept at that side of the equation. We can do it, but it's usually a very sensitive conversation for clients. They don't like to get into their pricing.
Right.
But we're there. We have helped. Sometimes clients do open up and they look for advice on how best to price competitively, how best to manage overhead and indirects and sometimes how to get ready for a DCA audit, for example.
So not necessarily the hardcore pricing, correct, but the pricing guidance, the coming up with
maybe even how to set up your overhead.
Right.
Because, all that, if you're a new company, you don't have a clue really how to do any of that. People that maybe have an MBA understands overhead compared to direct charge or.
But there's a lot of nuances in government contracting. Correct. My one company that I was at a couple of years ago, it was very small. It was like 70 people. We didn't even really have a pricing person. We had somebody who did our books. So we actually outsourced when we did proposals, we just outsourced all the pricing pieces.
Is that just overhead then, the outsourcing cost? Or is that?
The company.
Is there a write-off to say something we had to do?
Goes in the contract. I mean,
well, but well, I'm going to say you can't typically charge that back to the government, right?
Yeah, no.
So you can't say I had to pay for a consultant to help me write this proposal to win this work.
No, no. That's part of your just bid proposal costs. Yeah.
Well, some of the companies I worked for, you know, it's $1 million that they put per proposal on just our side. So
it's a little different. Proposals are expensive. That's the other reason why, you know, maybe we should do we should, the two of us, come with what's the analysis between if you hired an outsource team to help with your proposal and or write it versus you doing it yourself, what's the cost differentiator? I'd be curious actually to see those numbers. I don't know if you've done something like that.
No, I haven't done that specific analysis. Just anecdotally, though, I think it really comes down to volume. If a company's doing a lot of proposals, then you see them do
more BD guys.
They have more of an in-house proposal shop. It's those companies that are doing a proposal maybe once a month or every so often, then they need more help because they don't have the resources to manage in-house, or if they just get overwhelmed with a bunch of proposal opportunities at one time, then you see some help. Another thing too, that, you know, even for those companies that have the in-house proposal shop, if you will, we bring FP&C, because of our former positions as contracting officers, we bring kind of a unique perspective and context to evaluating whether or not that proposal is going to grade well in the evaluation, how a government evaluator is going to look at it and read it in comparison to the RFP that was put out.
You said you even start at the beginning, though, right? By saying, let's start building a pipeline together so they don't get too far down a proposal and you come and say, why are you even doing this? It's not in your wheelhouse, right?
Well, he actually offers the whole spectrum so they can start from the beginning.
Do you guys bring your points of contact throughout your military career and your civilian side to say, well, I know this guy, we can help, you know, make introductions or...
Yeah, the short answer is yes, but in government contracting, I mean, the federal government's pretty vast, so the opportunities are everywhere, and we try not to have clients hone in on just where we know, because even, you know, all of our careers are pretty lengthy, and we know a lot of people in the federal government. It's a decimal point at best, the amount of people out there. So what we try to do is coach people on how to find the right person, how to find the decision maker, how to find the person who's going to write the contract. How do you get in touch with the contracting officer? When is it appropriate to get in touch with the contracting officer? Because sometimes, you know, you don't want to get a hold of contracting. You want to go get a hold of the program manager, the requirement owner, or whatever. So it's not just about turning on the contacts that we know, but learning how to find them on their own and how to, you know, break the ice and get a hold of the right person at the right time.
Teach them to fish.
Yeah.
So I actually want to pull on that string then. So you mentioned two things there. When is it appropriate to contact the PM and when is it appropriate to contact the contracting officer, right? In general, can you give us, the listeners, an idea of that? I mean, without giving away your entire
business. No, so as an example, a company often will come to me and they'll say, okay, hey, I want to get a hold of the contracting officer because I want to tell them what I can do for the government. And we'll tell them, well, that's great, but a contracting officer is not, they're not the keeper of a requirement. All they are going to do is execute a requirement once they get it from a requirement owner, a PM. So I say, look, we need to go find a requirement owner to get excited about what you're offering. And then, you know, when it comes time to close the business deal, then we go talk to a contracting officer and find out how we can leverage your existing contract vehicles or access to contract vehicles and make that business sell. So there's the technical sell, PM, business sell, contracting officer. And we'll, you know, we coach on how best to leverage both sides of that relationship.
Well, so I think where a lot of people fail, especially just getting into federal acquisition or contracting like this, is it's way different than commercial world as far as the speed of which you sell something, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like you said, when is the right time? you're not going to do this typically in a month's time, right? This is a long haul game where you better be planning a year in advance to say, hey, I can do this. I know you got a contract coming up next summer. Can I talk with you or something like that, right?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest challenges I see in the consulting arena is managing expectations. And clients will come in and they'll say, hey, this RFP just dropped 2 weeks ago and there's 2 weeks left to put in a proposal. Let's do it. Like 2 weeks is not going to be enough if you're just learning about this opportunity right now. We probably need to talk a little bit.
And potentially they, even though they're not supposed to, they could have somebody picked already, right? Because they had somebody in mind that's already doing it, even though it's full and open.
Could be.
An open competition.
Yeah, there's always telltale signs.
It's still
signs.
Human nature, right?
Yeah, there's telltale signs when an RFP comes out.
Who is designed for? Is it designed for the incumbent or somebody new?
Exactly. Yep.
Can't always tell, but
no.
Man, my throat's just gone.
What is
today.
Going on?
I must have been yelling at you a lot yesterday.
We were on radio.
Nate, keep up. That's why I lost my radio, so I had to yell.
Campfire smoke.
There was that too.
It was a good time though.
We actually haven't sat down and talked about it at all yet. We just kind of showed up at work today and went.
Oh, all right.
Are you from here, Charlie? Are you from Colorado?
No, actually, my dad was Air Force, so all over the place. And then I was Air Force for the first 12 years after high school. And so I bounced around all over myself. And I got out of the Air Force and went to work in Orlando with the Navy for about 4+ years. And then I wound up in Colorado in 2011 with a job at Defense Health Agency.
So that's up in Denver, the Defense Health Agency?
Yep, it's up in
Denver.
Didn't
we just talk to somebody yesterday? Defense Health Association?
Yeah, I never heard
DHA,
of it.
DHA, you were saying
DHA,
I never heard of it?
Yeah.
It's actually out of Buckley.
Yeah.
Well, it's adjacent to Buckley. It's not on Buckley. It's pretty close to Buckley, though.
Yeah, we were talking to somebody yesterday. One of your workers. He's just the IT for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was all the RMF packaging and stuff.
We've come full circle.
we were walking away from the dinosaur tracks when you were asking him that question.
That's true. We were. So, I was like, so what
is
this?
This is deja vu.
It's a small world.
So what did you do for them? Acquisition?
I was a contracting officer. I oversaw the, if you are familiar with the TRICARE program, I oversaw the contract that delivers healthcare benefits to military members and their family in the downtown area.
Okay. So now when you were talking about difference between, when to talk to the contracting officer or the PM, it's also the subject you talk to them to about, right? Because so if I'm a GSA Oasis pool contractor, I probably want to talk to the contracting officer about trying to swing his mind of him or her mind about
which pool
putting, or GSA, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Instead of full and open or making sure it's a small business set aside. The PM's not going to care about that. The PM cares about his requirements. So I think that's the other key point, right? You know your audience and what you should be talking to that audience about.
Yeah, 100%. We try to really integrate with the client as much as we can because we want to understand what's going to benefit them when we're coaching them on how to speak with the government or if we're along for the ride, what to say when we speak to the government. Part of that is getting the PM excited about what they have to offer. The second is how can we make it appear easy for the PM to get to that offering? The government, it tends to be path of least resistance, and we want to make that that level of resistance as low as possible for the PM to make it happen. So that's, we look at all avenues to demonstrate ease of contracting.
Now that's on the, I guess, the capture side of things.
Right.
And then you said you also kind of work with them to build out their pipeline. And do you guys like to push any types of tools or are you guys agnostic as to what they use as long as they're using something to track things?
Yeah, so we're pretty flexible. For clients that have something established, we can plug into that, no problem. We can help them refine the process that they have already, whether it's tools or process or both. We do have tools that we like to use if they don't have anything, and we'll implement that for clients. That it's a technology-based tool that is available to anyone and everyone. that is a client of ours, and we use that as a tracking mechanism, a way to document where things are at and in the pipeline and what the outcome of that opportunity was. But yeah, we do have tools, and we like to employ those because it's better to track those things. And, and if you're not if you're using an Excel spreadsheet to keep track of it.
I was just going
to
say,
that's
my tool of choice.
Does your company have a tool that you guys sell, or do you just have other tools that you recommend that these companies?
There's tools that we recommend. We don't have anything that we necessarily sell, but there is a tool that we use pretty exclusively for pipeline management. And it's basically a Trello. If you've seen Trello, it's like a Trello type of tool. It's called Infinity Board.
Okay, I know more of it. So same type of thing here, right? I mean, our company was using.
I was using Excel.
He's not joking.
Actually, we had an Access database, but it got corrupted, so they stopped using that. They had built a tool.
Yeah.
But it wasn't working right anymore, and so they were actually looking. And when I came on board here, they were like, we don't really have anything right now because we had the thing and it crashed. So they were looking. They were actually exploring several tools. And then Nate came on and brought a commercial tool, same kind of thing. And so we started using that. I did want to ask you one question, though. Wait. GovWin Beta Sam or GovTribe? That's been my thing lately.
All three.
Well, yeah.
Depends on what you're going after and...
Okay.
Yeah, I do like what they've done with Beta Sam.
You do?
Really? Yeah. You're the first person I said that. Well, I've heard that.
You didn't let me get to my caveat. I will say it's they still have some ways to go for it to be fully refined, but back in FBO days, I was really comfortable.
I was the best.
Yeah, I was very comfortable with where that was at. But to me, I see them evolving and trying to make the capability. They're trying to make the capability. At least in my perception is they're trying to make the capability aligned with more what's in some of these commercial software applications that you're talking about, GovWin and GovTribe.
Right.
I use all three. You know, Nate mentioned it, all three. I do use all three. There's pros and cons to all of them. Beta.sam is just new, and it's, you know, they're still working out bugs. And I think over time it'll evolve to be a pretty solid tool. How long that takes, I don't know.
Beta Sam's been problematic to me because I can't find things in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I need to watch some tutorials or something. I'm sure they're on there, but
yeah,
it's not intuitive.
I swear they used the company that built Obamacare website to develop beta.sam. I'm like, seriously? Because FBO
did.
I just feel like I lost like 50% functionality from FBO.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. At minimum.
I agree. It's not intuitive, and it's clunky.
Yeah, I think they tried to be slick with it, and you know, I think it. I've seen improvements when it first came out. I hated it. I thought it was terrible, and over time, I've seen some incremental improvements. I don't know. Okay. They're okay.
So we're gonna take a quick break. When we get back, we're actually gonna talk to you guys and let you know what all three of those are. Because now that you brought them up, Dennis, there's some people out there that might not have a clue what we're talking about. So when we get back, we'll do that.
Did you know the Department of Defense has over 350,000 contractors? Many of these firms will be forced out of business in the year 2021 because they are not CMMC compliant. Livelihoods will be lost because they have not implemented the CMMC protocol. DevilDog Cybersecurity partners with contractors to create and implement robust cybersecurity solutions that meet the DoD requirements. Our team of engineers have a large depth of knowledge in the CMMC and NIST 800-171. Solutions can be implemented in as little as 30 to 90 days, depending on the size and scope of the project. Best of all, DevilDog has an affordable pricing structure specifically designed for small to medium-sized business. The big question is your firm ready for a CMMC audit? Contact DevilDog Cybersecurity and receive your free vulnerability assessment with no obligation. Register for your free assessment at devildogcyber.com. DevilDog is here to make cybersecurity compliance affordable, fast, and painless. Our solutions let you focus on doing the work you do best, the heart of your business.
Welcome back to this week's Smallest Cast Podcast. This week we have DK in the office and we have Mr. Charlie Hargett, the CEO and founder of FPNC Consulting. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
I got bit by a dog. My dog.
Your dog beat you.
Yeah, really like chomped on my arm like a month ago and I still can't feel.
Were you feeding your dog?
Anything. No, they were fighting. Remember? My dogs were fighting I grabbed it. I remember the story. And he turned on me and I could not get him off my arm. Oh. It was like.
I'm just saying, never bite the hand that feeds you.
Stitches. Do you feed the dog? You name it.
Or is it the wife that feeds the dog all the time?
I feed him.
Probably a little less now, huh?
Sure. Anyways.
What's one meal day for you.
After he bit me, it was a lot more less than that even. Anyways.
You had your meal for the day.
No, for life. So I did want to talk. Oh, you going to talk about what GovWin Beta Sam.
Well, yeah, I want him to if he can just explain real quick what the Beta Sam is, what those tools are. Do they cost money? Are they free? You know, for the listening audience out there.
So betasam.gov is the government's tool for searching opportunities that the government puts out there. The vast majority of requirements that the government comes out with are on beta.sam.gov and,
federal government, right?
It is federal government,
not state or local.
That's an important thing to note. Yes, yeah. It's federal government. So, not all are on there. Of course, to get into that discussion on what's not on beta.sam would be another hours long conversation. So I won't go down that rabbit hole. That one is a free website, a free tool, and companies who are not interested in spending a ton of money on a subscription-based tool should go there and get very familiar with it. It can be a bit of a clunky tool. It can be it is new back in
newish now.
Huh? Yeah, it is kind of newish. It's almost not new anymore, but. A few years ago, they switched over from FedBizOps, which was the system that's was out there for maybe 15 years or so, something like that.
Yeah, they're getting to the point now where I don't think they shouldn't be using the word beta anymore. It should just be SAM.gov.
They actually are supposed to be cutting over to just SAM.gov
soon,
within the next year, I think, maybe even less. Maybe it says on the website, the longest
beta I've ever seen.
Well, they want to be careful.
That's right.
Yeah, wow.
Obamacare, remember? You just mentioned it.
was that a lot, Mike? Sorry.
And then GovWin is a commercial service from Dell Tech.
Yeah.
And I don't know who does GovTribe.
GovTribe is from GovTribe. Yeah. They are an alternative. They both have pros and cons. They're both subscription-based services. One of the best pros for GovTribe is it's substantially less expensive than GovWin.
Right.
And I also like the user interface much better on GovTribe than GovWin. It's much easier to navigate, much more intuitive, and the information is pulling from pretty much the same source that everyone else does. It's all publicly available data that they pull from. So you're not getting any different data. The big difference with GovWin is they have actual people analysts behind the data. They're actually picking up the phone, making phone calls, and doing a lot of human work behind it. So,
right.
With that, the expense comes because that raises the cost of GovWin.
And they do reports and webinars.
To be fair, though, I've seen quite a few mistakes, or they're behind the power curve. And
Well, I have some. And this is just my own personal opinion. I'm not a proponent I'm not trying to talk anyone in or out of any of these tools. So don't take that. But as a contracting officer, I remember getting phone calls, especially at DHA, because the procurements were quite large. I'd get phone calls from GovWin analysts saying, hey, what's the latest on this? Once I'd recognize a number, I would ignore it because I had other priorities that I needed to deal with, but two, more importantly, I didn't want to give out procurement sensitive information that on accident that I'm not supposed to give. So I would just try to avoid the call at all costs or get off the phone as quick as I could. So some of the information I see on GovWin is actually pretty good and pretty actionable. So whatever the analysts that are doing that calling is doing a good job of having a conversation. But by and large,
I've found the same thing. Yeah. Literally, I've just a couple months ago, I was trying to call a couple, trying to find, you know, the POCs, the contracting officers, and I'd call one up and they'd be like, yeah, I'm not the contracting officer for that. That's so-and-so. And I'm like, well, there's three listed on GovWin. And so are any of these? And they'd be like, no, none of them are. And I'm like, well, okay. So they had bad information or old information. It probably was from the last time, 4 years ago when the contract was last let. That's who did it.
But think about it. They got to keep a track. Like you said, there's a lot, they're moving dates all the time. They're moving contracting officers to different people. I mean, there is a lot of movement going on too. So I think they do a good job.
Well,
and they do put out good information. I haven't been.
I don't know what to call it. I'm sure it's expensive, but
yeah,
it is. Yeah, relatively speaking.
So on your consulting business, you have your own accounts on all these tools? Do you make the company that you're consulting for get the tools, or do they just come through you to get access to that?
No, some of our clients do have the tools, and when that happens, information sharing is just easier. But for those companies that don't have subscriptions to either of those tools, we leverage our account to help them out.
So have you, I don't know if you noticed this. I've noticed in the past few months, GovWin, there's one big thing that's broken in there to where I try to do a weekly, I get a weekly email to say, okay, here's everything on cybersecurity in the Colorado area. For example, I can't export that any longer into a PDF. That functionality has been busted. I can export each one individually, but I can't export my report of stuff that I've been tracking. So that's kind of, so GovWin, when you're listening out there, we'll call you.
Fix it.
We're paying you money. Fix it.
So Charlie, you also did, and we won't go too much into it. So you also were supporting the National Veterans Small Business Coalition here in Colorado, getting that moving. Are you still engaged with them nationally, I'm guessing?
Yeah, I'm still a member of that. And I do believe that the NVSBC is looking to expand their chapter. It's a great, great organization geared toward veteran, as the name would imply, veteran businesses. And they do a fantastic job and are pretty big in terms of member base and activity in the National Capital Region. Not surprising, but they also are pretty big in the Florida area too. So I think they're looking to replicate what the success they've had in Florida and move those around. We did try to get something going a couple years ago here in Colorado for that, to do a Colorado chapter. It started to grow legs. We just weren't able, we were not able to get it, enough traction to keep it going. So would love to, now that we're past this pandemic and things are starting to open back up and people are eager to get back out, I'd definitely love to re-engage that conversation with the national organization and see if they would be willing to put some resources into trying it again. But it's a fantastic organization.
We also, so I think I talked to you about this when we talked before, we're, for the smalls, we're starting to do more. We're getting calls to do more. So, yeah, I'd like to collaborate with you on that as we move forward. We are doing an event. I'm going to plug out here, probably mid-June, and we are going to tie it in with NDIA, AIAA, U.S. Space Force Academy. Oh, my gosh. The Space Force Academy.
It's coming.
It is.
That's not too far away, I bet.
The Space Force Association. And we're going to have some collaborative events here in Pueblo, Colorado Springs, and Denver, both North and South Denver. And those will happen between, will be the first one here in Colorado Springs, mid-June all the way through mid-August. Everybody's pretty excited about kicking something off. So if you want to join that group,
absolutely,
I'll bring you in. Okay. And we'll bring you into that.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, sorry.
So
shameless plug.
How big is your company?
We have four people. Okay. Right now. It's myself and three team members, and we're probably going to be growing here pretty quick because we have just about as much work as we can handle. So work just is not a problem right now. So we're managing and we're doing well to keep up with what we have, and we'd like to grow and continue to bring on both talented people that have the background to provide good consulting advice and have good relevant experience as well as new clients. We're always looking to grow our client base and help out whoever is interested in getting some guidance from us.
Two questions. I want to put them on the table. We can answer them in different order. But one, how do you... No, I forgot it.
How do you get a hold of them? How do they decide? No.
Well, yeah. So what are your product offerings? Does it start with proposal? Do you stay on? Let's say they win a proposal. Do you stay on to help them get it kicked off? And then you ride off into the wind or sunset or what?
We're essentially
a menu of options.
Yeah. We're essentially hourly based. Yeah. So, we are available for the extent that a client wants us to be available. A lot of our agreements are project oriented, so we can write based on the project. And if the client is looking to have help with the kickoff and the transition or whatever, we can program manage that. And we can include that in the agreement and make sure that we're around to be part of putting the proposal together and then delivering on what was proposed. And that does make a lot of sense. And clients do like that.
That's what I was kind of wondering if you can, or if you submit and then you're like, hey, you're welcome, thank you.
Sometimes that's what the client is looking for. Sometimes they just want a review from a contracting officer's viewpoint. And so we'll just take a red team ready proposal and we'll either participate on the red team or we'll do it, you know, outside of that. And we'll, you know, look at a proposal that's, you know, maybe 85-90% ready and we'll give our feedback on it and they can do what they want with it.
In your life, what's the largest size proposal you've ever done? Like not dollar value, but like thickness.
So
just curious.
In my life. So I've been a contracting officer where, the TRICARE contracts are all together. They were many billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Quite large on the proposal prep side, we've written technical volumes, over about 100 pages. I would probably say it was one of the bigger pain in the neck ones.
Yeah. Those are pretty big.
Yeah.
Nate goes, I got you beat.
I got you beat. Oh, I used to do some technical where we'd do, these are smaller contracts, 36 million or something like that, but the 3 year. And there would be anywhere between 250 and 500 pages technical volumes.
How long ago was that? Well, they're probably technical.
So 10 years ago?
Yeah. I've noticed probably over the last 5 years or so, contracting officers are getting better about asking for less in the proposals.
Oh, yeah. I just did one.
Well, they don't want to read it.
I had a 9-day turn, and then they're like, we want a 5-page paper, and that is the absolute max, no more.
Right.
So if we... They even stated, if you could do it in less than five, we'd appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm like, how do I
pictures.
How do I write?
Lots of pictures.
How do I write to a very, very high...
Technical. It's high technical.
How do I write technical to a $100 million proposal in less than 5 pages?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, and there's a disconnect.
Can I embed a video?
Yeah. I'd love to be able to consult with the government, too, because there's a lot... Having seen both sides of the coin now, I just feel like there's such a value there because I can feel the pain points of the contractors that are responding to the RFP, and I can advise the government on, hey, you need to craft your RFP a little bit differently so that, you know, you get better responses, because there are disconnects there. They want all this information crammed in 5 pages. Well, ask for less information. You don't have to get all that information to make
it best. That's always been the case, right? Yeah. Here's my... So I was born and raised on a farm, okay? I was. And I remember my father would... You know, we raised small grains, so wheat, durum, you know, all that types of stuff. And he would always tell me... I always wanted to get into a combine. So this is what you take the grain off the field with, right, before you put it in semis or trucks. And he would say, you're not allowed to combine until you learn how to, or sorry, you're not allowed to windrow, so cut the grain down until you combine first. So essentially what that means is you should not be a contracting officer or a government PM until you've done the job of the constructor, of
contractor.
The contractor.
Yeah.
Because then you get an idea of what actually works, right? Because they're really the end one that's trying to produce something.
Yeah.
Obviously they're trying to make money, but in the end, they're trying to give you a product, right?
The product that they think you want.
Exactly.
Based on what the guidance you gave them.
I'm a, just like I'm a big believer in some companies where if you're an electrical engineer, you're going to come in, you're going to become a network engineer, a mechanical engineer, a civil engineer, and then you'll do electrical, but you're going to try everything out because they have to, you have to understand, you'll be a PM, a project manager. You have to understand how the whole thing works, right? Cradle to grave, to really understand how best walk a mile in somebody else's shoes.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're ever going to get there though. Cause like I was thinking that'd be a great topic for a conference or something like that. Right. Yeah. But I don't know how many government guys would go, or how many contractors will go, well,
you know what I mean? Because, yeah. You know, I've been a contractor my entire career, 20 plus years. And you always hear, once you get in to become friends with people, you know, the over drinks, people start throwing things out. All those contractors, they're just trying to, you know,
gouge us
or screw us on money. I'm like, look, they're making like 15% profit. And that's high for a government contract.
Yeah.
But what they don't understand is in the commercial world, 50% is normal for profit, right?
Right.
So it's not they're trying to take advantage. It's just,
well, the problem is every once in a while it comes out that somebody did.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so like
one person,
just like your normal lawyers, you know. Oh, sorry, lawyers. Your normal lawyers, you sorry, find Carrie. That loophole and you go after it. That's what causes the problems, I think.
Well, I think there's also on the government side, there's an incorrect perception of where the line is drawn and how much you can or can't talk to contractors about.
Oh,
and I mean, there really is much more latitude for the government to go out and have conversations with contractors than what you typically see. There's a handful of government people that I've come across that are pretty good and about being open and saying, here's what's going on. So
that is a good question. So what I've heard when I talk with either contracting officers or government PMs is typically a lot of them are open books until acquisition strategy has been defined. At acquisition strategy, that's what right before pre-RFP, where they're getting ready to put something out on GovWin or SAM.beta, that's usually when they lock up, right? And then as soon as the RFP drops, like nobody's talking to anybody at that point.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, but I would say that government can still go out and have conversations even after the acquisition strategy's been set. I think they are more apt to be careful and not give any procurement sensitive information out. But really the key is not to disclose any source selection sensitive information. And that's after pretty much after the RFP goes out and proposals have been received.
I have a problem with that. And I'll tell you what the problem is. The incumbent will always have a huge advantage in that case. And because you can't ask them any questions as a non-incumbent
Perfect example. How many people do you currently have working there?
Yeah.
Right.
On a bus and seats contract, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Because the government, I don't care what anybody says, the government, you know, they say it's not a bus and seats contract, an advisory assistance, ANAS contract, but they have their favorites. They know which ones they want.
Yep.
And if I came, they'll always tell you, right, even in the RFP, we're not going to tell you how many people to use because that's for you to define. But I guarantee you, if you had 100 people now as the incumbent and they're doing a good job, and I come in saying, I can do this with 80, they're going to say, no, we don't want that because you're going to fire 20 of our best people then.
So that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about, that they should be willing to do that. And I find often a lot of times they're not willing to.
Yeah, at least give me the how many people. I don't need to know what level they are or anything like that.
That's pricing, right? So you may throw yourself out because, one, you're down 20 people. But then, I think that you can do this all with junior grade guys. And you probably could, actually.
Yeah,
but
I don't know.
No, they want medium grade guys.
But then again, right?
They always want senior guys with a billion certifications and a master's degree.
But they don't want to pay for it.
For $40,000.
So I like when you said your job is to manage your client's expectations.
Yeah.
I would say that same thing. So I worked as an ANAS task lead or program manager at one point. And I would always tell my government project managers, because they come to me, hey, Nate, I got a new requirement. I need you to hire me a senior cybersecurity engineer that has a CISSP, their ISSE. They have 20 years experience, a master's degree in cybersecurity, and I need them to have a TSSCI SAP, and they need to start in 2 weeks, and we're willing to pay them $82,000 a year. I said, well, sir or ma'am, I will give it the best try I can, but it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, that double the salary and maybe I can entice somebody away, but you know, it's,
yeah,
Those are tough things.
But those are, you know, I would recommend, Charlie, if you can get some government guys, that'd be great. And maybe that's something we try to bring in. Like we're talking about doing a conference again next year, now that COVID's kind of going away. Maybe that's something that we talk about is we were going to have a small business outreach, which we'll still do. We'll bring all the small business offices from all the agencies in Colorado together for a conference for them to engage with the contracting community. But maybe that's a subject that we bring up. I think that's actually a really good point.
Yeah, no, I'd love to participate in something like that. I'd love to be able to help do anything I could to help bridge that gap, because there are really good people in the government that mean well and want to do a good job. There's great people on the contractor side.
I think like we just said, it's the 99% that are great. It's the 1%
that's what causes it, right? Yep. People start getting gun shy because of one stupid thing that a contractor did, or
stupid contractor. Hey, so Charlie, so how do people get a hold of you if they're interested in you know, getting some consultants in to help them?
Yeah, so our website is www.fpacadvisors.com. Our phone number is on there. You can feel free to call my cell phone number. You can get a hold of me anytime. It's 407-883-3434. That area code is from my Orlando days. I never bothered to change it.
I was going to say, I recognize that area code.
Yeah. So, I'd be glad to take calls. Any, call me anytime. And if there's something I can help out with, happy to have that discussion.
So I know we were making fun of you, or I was, because you came prepared with some notes here on an Apple device. Is there something that you wanted to talk about specifically that we haven't kind of touched base on, or?
No, I think this was a great conversation. I appreciate you offering me up some time to talk about FPNC consulting and what we're all about, and just having a general discussion over some of the pain points that contractors probably see out there, and just know that we're a viable resource to reach out to.
And I think that's key, right? It's sometimes it's not the pain is not, or the juice is not worth the squeeze. Is that how they say it?
Sometimes.
Or
the juice is not worth the squeeze.
Yeah, that's what I said. So I got it right.
I was just confirming that. That's what I was right.
Sometimes you have to say things out loud before you realize, did I say that right?
So for our listening audience, I'll also add them to our weekly newsletter. So if you haven't signed up for that, I will add their information to the bottom there for partners. So if you need to get a hold of them, you can find them there as well.
Yes. So, this has been great.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie.
I've learned a lot, right? I mean, I go through life, and Dennis and I, is one of our favorite signs is just have that conversation, right? That next conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You never know where it's going to take you.
Yep.
I know who you are now and what you do, so that's a good thing.
I've actually known him for a long time.
I literally knew nothing about this one, and I'm the one that set it up.
You are. That's good.
But that's how we roll.
That's good.
Worked out good. I thought so.
All right, Charlie. Well, hey, thank you very much, and thanks for being on today. And for the listening audience, don't forget to go to fpacadvisors.com if you want to get a hold of Charlie. And their information will also be in our newsletter at the bottom there for our partner organizations.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you coming on today, Charlie. And with that, this is the Smalls Cast signing off.
Thanks for listening.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Smalls Cast podcast. Connect with us at thesmalls.org. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free materials. See you at the next episode. See you at the next episode.